Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi guys, I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture. Very pleased to say I'm joined now by the NWA World Heavyweight Champion and the legend that is Nick Aldis. Nick, thank you so much for taking time to chat to us today.
Well, thank you, Adam. I think legend might be a tad of a stretch, but certainly doing my best to try to get there in the end.
Well, what, 950-odd days as champion is a hell of an achievement. But we're here to talk about you defending that title, of course, When Our Shadows Fall this Sunday, the 6th of June, against Trevor Murdoch. It's going to be live on pay-per-view on Fight, of course. Trevor Murdoch winning that 14-man Battle Royal. How are you feeling about the match on Sunday?
I'm tremendously looking forward to it. I love matchups where the rivalry and the sort of contrast between the two guys is very, very apparent.
Yes.
I love the idea that somebody could sort of jump on this train at any given point during this quite long build that we've had now and still be pretty clued up within one episode, like, oh, okay, This guy's the refined guy in the suit, and he's a bit of an elitist, and he thinks a lot of himself. And then there's this other guy who's the blue collar working man's hero. It's a tale as old as time. It's certainly we certainly haven't reinvented the wheel, but it just works, and I love it. And when you get a guy as talented as Trevor, who I had such an instant chemistry with and have such a, and we both fully understand our strengths and weaknesses and how people perceive us. We both have, I believe, a good degree of self-awareness, which is vitally important to telling a credible story and, booking sort of credible angles. Like, there's just, I never believe in trying to swim upstream with anything. I've a pretty at this point, I've been in the wrestling business for 16 years, been subjected to my fair share of online criticism, and you develop a pretty thick skin and a sort of self-awareness to generally the flow of like how you're perceived or where things are headed. So now I just my time in the NWA has been sort of defined by me just sort of steering the ship sort of whichever way that I feel the wind blowing in that respect, and it's served us pretty well, because I feel like if you take AEW out of the equation as far as a sort of a new entity, I feel like from a startup with three people and a YouTube show to now having a streaming deal and sort of worldwide distribution and some pretty decent revenue, it's like, we've done pretty well to bootstrap this thing. And I think sometimes, obviously, look, you have somebody with the incredible amount of wealth that, the Khan family have, and obviously suddenly it's like, seems like a drop in the bucket, but it's like, I'm proud that we're able to sort of make enough of an impact to where I'm sort of perceived in that, in that kind of upper echelon of guys, and our pay-per-views and our title matches get a lot of recognition, and they get a lot of anticipation. And I think that's a testament to the way that we do wrestling. Like, we do wrestling our own way, and we do it deliberately differently to anywhere else, so that we can provide something different for wrestling fans. You know, I always use this analogy, and it's going to be lost on Brits for the most part, but I want us to be like In-N-Out Burger. Right? You know, in the States, obviously you've got McDonald's and you've got Burger King, and they're everywhere. And then, you know, obviously because it's America, you've got about 20 other fast food places. But, but when you go to California or, you know, certain places like, you know, the West Coast and certain parts of Texas and this and that, you get In-N-Out Burger.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever anyone from the East Coast or from, you know, from somewhere like where I'm from, like where I live in Tennessee, it's like when you go to, you know, suddenly you see an In-N-Out Burger and you go, ooh, In-N-Out Burger.
Mm-hmm.
It's burgers and fries. Like it's, you know, it's just, and they have a very, very simple menu. It's like, you know, the single, double, you know, like sort of everything's pretty straightforward. It's a, you know, but they just focus on doing it really, really well. Mm-hmm. With, you know, with no sort of gimmickry and you know, unnecessary sort of bollocks with it. and because it's because their marketing is sort of based off of that exclusivity, you can't get it quite as easily as the other places. So when you can get it, it feels more special. You know, you really savor it because it's like, oh, this is just a traditional, you know, good guilty pleasure, all American sort of fair. And like that's how I want the NWA to be perceived, like a sort of guilty pleasure for the most sort of jaded, hardened wrestling fan who is like studying every single thing, and also for like a casual fan who every now and then just kind of goes, oh, I miss those days of, you know, wrestling. We want to be that place where people can go, that's fun, you know, like that's an easily digestible hour of content to consume and enjoy.
No, that definitely comes across. The reference to In-N-Out Burger is not lost on me. When I made a trip to the West Coast, it was like people recommending, right, do this, go to San Fran, do Fremont Street, and make sure you get In-N-Out Burger. So I very much can appreciate where you're coming from with that. Fans are going to, limited number of fans are going to be back in attendance for this show. It's been a hell of a roller coaster, obviously, not just for NWA, for all of wrestling for the past year or so. I know you had to take a long hiatus with NWA, of course. What's it like getting back into it? And more importantly, what's it going to be like with fans back in attendance? We've seen the likes of WrestleMania and Double or Nothing, and, you know, the fans' enjoyment of that, but presumably also the wrestlers just being able to feed off that as well.
Yeah, I was saying during the pandemic that I thought that the one positive that we could take from all this, and I, you know, that's just my nature. I try to see the positives that can come from any of these things, you know, any sort of adversity. And I said even then the one thing I could see happening was that there would be a renewed enthusiasm and a renewed appreciation both ways. Like I felt like perhaps over the last few years, wrestling overall had sort of shifted somewhat to a situation where it was kind of like most pro wrestling shows that I was seeing were kind of like, okay, we're doing our show, and if you like it, great. If you don't, we don't care. Like it was very much like, here's what we're doing, and like, you know, ta-da. Like there was no, you know, there wasn't that level of sort of interaction that you fed off of, and that you know, the thing that makes wrestling unique is that if something works, you can have that ability to adapt and sort of go with it. So then the audience really feel like they're, you know, organically part of something. Now, the flip side of that is that, yes, I believe that there are perhaps too many fans now who perhaps do yield a bit too much power in terms of sort of the constant sort of threatening to boycott or, you know, do this or we riot. And, you know, and it's a very indicative of kind of the culture that has perhaps got a little bit out of control.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see where that's probably why wrestling sort of bucked against it. Do you know what I mean? They went so far toward, I remember seeing it in TNA, you know, they started catering a little bit too much to the loudest online fans rather than, you know, you've got to take them into account, but you've got to understand, you know, that it's a balancing act every day. You know, every day you've got to try to kind of, okay, let's keep this plate over here spinning. Let's keep this one over here spinning. Oh, this one's going to, okay. You know, it's tough. And I think that, you know, there are a collection of fans who sort of think, no, it should be all about like what pleases me, and everyone else is just stupid if they don't agree with what I think. And I think that as a result of that, maybe some of the you know, the business in general started going, you know, we're just going to do what we want. And, you know, and so it, and we reached a bit of an impasse. And I think that there was so much wrestling, and there is so much wrestling, that I think perhaps both ways there had sort of, we'd lost a little bit of that specialness.
Mm.
The excitement of going to a show and kind of anticipating what's going to happen and really just kind of being one with the moment. Instead, it was, all right, you know, here I am ready to analyze this. And then the wrestlers are out there, okay, like, I better make sure that I, you know, please everyone and don't, you know. And I think between all that, then we sort of got to this point where now, we can have fans again. They're excited to be here.
Mm.
We're excited to have them. Like, we're going to interact with them again, because human interaction is, you know, to me, is really the sort of lifeblood of the industry.
Mm.
And, you know, now we have it, and it's maybe, you know, it's going to be a blessing in disguise, or at least that's what my, you know, eternal optimism would like to think.
In terms of, like, you talk about, like, wrestling and, you know, the comparisons to, say, sports entertainment, and we've seen, you know, WWE going in a certain direction. But I felt like you said there, with the return of fans, it does feel like a shift more towards the sort of old school stuff, which is sort of inherent within NWA, because, you know, it's all well and good piling things on top of each other. But it's sometimes, like you say, with you and Trevor Murdoch, it's sometimes great to just get it back to the basics of that. Just like, these are two polar opposites and they are going against each other for this ultimate prize. Is that fair?
I think so. I think that, again, I think some of this speaks to the sort of culture that had perhaps, that's always been there, but had perhaps, you know, started to develop a bit too much power in the overall direction of the industry,
mm-hmm.
which is that this sort of narrative had started to develop where if you didn't do tons and tons of high impact, high risk moves, and you didn't, you know, pile false finish onto false finish onto false finish, and you didn't do these incredibly intricate, hard to remember high spots, you know, mm-hmm. with sort of a sequence of moves that could never possibly happen organically, and you know, was very makes it very obvious to anyone watching that this was sort of planned ahead of time, that somehow you weren't working hard enough.
Mm.
You know, that somehow and if anyone who didn't wrestle like that was quote unquote lazy, you know, whereas I've always been of the opinion that wrestling like that is lazy, because it's like, Your responsibility as a performer is not only to the audience, but it's to the big picture, the long term, you know, viability of the business,
mm.
and it's also to your other performers on the card.
Mm.
So, you know, if you go to a fancy restaurant and you go to one of those, you know, one of those incredibly sort of elaborate, you know, like a French something or other, where it's like seven courses, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like a pay-per-view has seven matches. It's like going to a restaurant with seven courses. And each chef is responsible for a different course. So like today, you know, okay, like you're an up-and-coming chef in a Michelin star restaurant, right? So today, you know, look, you're a low man on the totem pole today. Tonight's not your night. So tonight you just got to make a little amuse-bouche, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And I know this is a terribly highbrow analogy, but here we go. So like, okay, so you bring out, you know, just a sort of a tiny, you know, foie gras or whatever, something, right? And it's like, oh, that was great. It's a mouthful. That was really great. Oh, delicious, you know, blah, blah, blah. Next course comes out and maybe it's, you know, soup, you know, but it's like, oh, it's this, you know, whatever, right? And so on. And it goes on, right? Until the end, where you get to the end and it's like, here it is. Here's the duck confit with, you know, blah, 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 you know, whatever, right? It would be sometimes I see shows and it's like, suddenly the third course comes out and it's the fucking duck confit, you know, and it's like the whole thing. And it's like, oh, well, here's this and this and this and this. So now you're full.
Yeah.
And you sort of go, and, you know, and now, you know, you're sitting there going, I don't really want anything else. I'm sort of, you know, that was kind of enough.
Mm.
I see a lot of, you know, just a lot of the product that I was seeing, you know, even prior to the NWA kind of getting rolling in 2017 just felt like an all-you-can-eat buffet, you know, where it was like, why can't I just savor this one thing? Like, that was really great. Suddenly, before I had a chance to even enjoy it and savor it, suddenly I'm being pelted with all this other stuff. Well, what about this? What about this? Try this. Eat that. And there's a place for that, just not 24/7, 365. And I firmly believe that is, you know, one of the reasons why the overall kind of audience may be, you know, diminished, because to a lot of people, they weren't watching for that. They enjoyed one or two matches to be like that, but they weren't watching for just that. And when it became just that, it just sort of lost its human appeal, because to a lot of people, they watched the product to connect with it on a human level, because it's escapism. It's a sort of, it's a live Rocky movie playing out in front of your face, you know, and people can live vicariously through that and suspend their disbelief, you know. But if it's a good card, might finish with a Rocky fight as the main event, but, you know, some of the undercard matches might be a Jackie Chan film, you know, where you know, but if the whole card is all Jackie, it's kind of like, okay, but, you know, these kung fu movies is not typically not a lot of storyline, not a lot of plot. You know, it's pretty much just like, ah, master turned on me, bam, bam, bam. You know, I'm gonna fight 20 guys and beat them all. You know, and again, it's cool to have a little bit of that.
Yeah,
not a whole card. So I've gone the long way around answering you, Adam. But really, from the beginning, what influence I do try to have on the NWA is to sort of instill that culture that, like, hey, remember what the people came to see tonight, you know, and let's you will leave a better taste, a better impression on the audience if you do your part tonight to the best of your ability, like, and do your job perfectly and leave them wanting more, you know. And Trevor gets that. That's why he's gone from, you know, he came in and he originally, like, we had to really kind of convince him to even come to, you know, and at first it was, he was kind of like, I don't know, I'm not really wrestling anymore. And I, you know, I don't know, I don't really fit in anywhere. This has very same, very, very similar hangups that I had. You know, it was like, I don't really know where I fit anymore. And so we said, well, come down and, you know, work a couple of matches, but you can be a producer, you know, you can be a good agent, you know. And of course, like, we were, you know, we had every intention of wanting him to wrestle the whole time. But, you know, you see his progression, and it's like the second he walked out on, you know, in the first season, you could just feel people go, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This guy fits here. Like, this is, oh, I completely forgot about him, which was great, like, which was good in a way, because then they sort of go, whoa, this guy's like, I forgot this, how good this guy is. And man, he just fits this. You know, he came into WWE at the wrong time. You know, he just had bad timing. A lot of guys did. That's why we've, you know, Chris Adonis is having a great run with us now. Same reason, because, like, these guys all got picked up in their 20s. I can relate. I got signed to TNA at 21. I wasn't ready for TV. But now we're all in our 30s and we're seasoned, you know, and it's kind of like, hey, like, we're just reaching our peak for pro wrestlers here. So, like, now we're gonna, you know, put everyone to work and watch everybody, you know, enjoy seasoned kind of guys who have, you know, really learned how to relax and sort of command the room and take their time and, you know, really understand psychology and tell a different kind of story that maybe, you know, hits the notes that maybe some other wrestling isn't hitting right now. And again, this is not a knock. I have to tread so carefully when I make these kind of remarks, because everything always immediately gets taken out of context to sort of, especially to antagonize AEW. Like, that's the new thing with online. It's like anything that can be even remotely sort of perceived as some sort of slight or knock on AEW is immediately, like, you know, taken out of context and like, hey, let's get him, everyone. You know, like, you know, and like, I was all in. I was so proud of those guys, you know, and it's been well documented that, you know, they approached me about going, and there was no animosity. It was just like, hey, man, I've just worked really hard, and I've just sort of got so invested in trying to make a go of this that I felt like we were just getting it off the ground. I was like, yeah, I'd had some big matches like with Cody and Marty and, you know, the other stuff. But in my mind, looking at the big picture, I was like, I'm just getting this thing off the ground. Like, I just can't, you know, it would be too frustrating for me as an entrepreneur to walk away now, because, you know, I am an entrepreneur outside of wrestling. It's like that. So I sort of have that mindset of, you know, long-term investing and sort of, looking at things and going, God, the potential here for, you know, for what I could potentially be rewarded with down the road. And it was a gamble. Yeah. It was a roll of the dice, but it was like, I just didn't want to take the low hanging fruit this time.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And you talk about, you know, the card and the way it's presented and stuff, and the talent you've got in the NWA. We have to talk briefly about Serena Deeb. Obviously, she's doing stuff in the NWA and, of course, in AEW as well. And again, someone else you talk about who was underutilized without question within the industry. Yeah. And now look at her. It's just right. You must be so impressed with what she's
achieved. Perfect example and a wonderful human being, a complete professional, one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. And yes, another one who she knew deep down how good she was, but she just, you know, it's tough when you have that skill set and you see all these other people come up who just seem to just blow right past you because they do something that's kind of the fashion right now, or, you know, that's something that kind of, or because they're good at Twitter, you know, because, you know, and, you know, Lord knows that all the major companies now just put such an emphasis on that, even though I'm still dubious about how much it really translates to, you know, box office. But be that as it may, yeah, just fantastic to see someone who again was like classically trained and never deviated from, you know, the doing things the right way and doing things in a way that leaves plenty available to the rest of her colleagues on the card, you know, but also is able to show how good she is. And more importantly, and the thing that separates Serena from a lot of the girls I see and a lot of the girls who get a lot of praise, is that she makes her opponent look good.
Yeah.
You know, she doesn't eat anyone's lunch in there. Like, it's real easy to go in the ring and just, you know, kick the shit out of someone for 15 minutes and then be like, I'm the best, you know, and everyone, he's the best. Oh, mate. But again, after a while, no one's going to want to work with you. Like, because they're going to go, what does that do for me? You know, we're all 1099s. Like, we're all independent contractors. Whether or not we're under contract to a certain organization, it's only for a select period of time. So you're not only having to sort of fulfill your role for the company for that night, but you are responsible for kind of protecting your own value as well in the market. So, okay, someone gets over because they just, you know, kick shit out of everyone and don't sell anything. You're going to go, well, why am I going to work with them if I don't have to? Because, you know, clearly their interest is only in, if you can only build your market value by hurting someone else's, that's not good business. Because look, the wrestling business that's what makes the wrestling business such a unique animal, that you have to be selfish. But you also have to look at the long term. You have to look at your long term viability in the market by being able to add value to others. You know, and it's a tightrope. But the guys who have longevity, and I'd like to think that I'm sort of one of them at this point. You know, sort of made a decent living and never got the call from Stanford. So it's like it must be doing something right. But a lot of that is again. You know, if you look at the list of guys that I've defended the title against, and where they've gone since that time, Robbie Eagles, Jonah Rock, you know, all the way down, like, and then, and you know, Mike Bennett, mm-hmm. like, you know, it's a lot of guys who, you know, and I mentioned this the other day, you know, I got a bit heated on Twitter, and, you know, it's a rarity for me, but I was just like, you know, fuck it. But I sort of said, like, go back and look through the guys that I've defended the title against and ask all of them. I guarantee you 95% of them now make more money than they did prior to wrestling me for the title. Like, I take a lot more pride in that than whether someone thinks I'm defending the title enough or have enough work rate. I don't, whatever the new thing is this yeah. week. But it's like, because this is a business, and in the long run, what guys remember are the guys who helped them put food on their table for their families.
Yeah.
You know, they're the guys I remember. That's why you'll never hear me say too much. You know, I'll acknowledge Dixie Carter's flaws, but you'll never hear me say a bad word about Dixie because she helped me make money. Like, she helped me make good money. She helped put food on my table. And that's, you can take everything else out of it. Like, that's, if any of us who would get to make decent money for doing this are so privileged, that's the perspective I always try to maintain.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You talk about, you know, defending the title, and obviously you're going to have to try and defend it against Trevor Murdoch on Sunday. There is someone else, though, who's collecting a lot of belts at the moment, one Kenny Omega, across many different companies. Are you concerned at all by him potentially eyeing up your title? And what do you make of what he's been doing across the likes of Impact and AAA and obviously AEW?
This goes back to what we were saying before, where it's impossible for me to answer this question, because even answering it, it will turn into Nick Aldis talks about Kenny Omega, and it's like, no, Nick Aldis was asked a question about Kenny Omega and answered it. Like, as far as I'm concerned, I would keep his name out of my mouth because it's none of my business, right? But I always say the same thing about this. If the business of it made sense, but I better make a load of money, you know, otherwise what's the point? Right. Like, and as far as like what he's doing, good for him.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot get distracted worrying about what other people are doing. That's for fans. This whole inter-promotional, like they try to sort of stir up this, you know, heat between different promotions and stuff, that's the fans. Like, Mark's doing that, it's not the wrestlers.
Yeah.
Like, most of us have worked together at some point or other or somewhere down the road, like, and you just understand that. And look, if there are any wrestlers out there who sort of fall into that who fall into that mentality of, like, you know, you're supposed to have heat with guys who wrestle for another company or who didn't come to wrestle for the company that you wrestle for, or whatever. Like, grow up. Like, it's business. And, like, everyone's just doing what they felt was the right thing to do for them. Like, I love the quality of life I have now. So, anyway. No, look, I respect Kenny. I don't know him very well. And, you know, I hope he's happy doing what he's doing. And if there was ever a situation where that was a, you know, where that was seriously kind of addressed, like, it would just, I would approach it like a prize fight. It would have to, you know, the business terms would have to make sense for me.
You know, there seems to be a lot of talk at the moment of sort of open doors of different companies working together. Obviously, as you mentioned, you know, you've done stuff with the AEW guys with All In, and you're on a good relationship with them. I saw you tweeting with people talking about you facing Dustin a while back. What do you make of that? Is that something you'd like to see more of in this industry? Because, you know, there's been a lot of speculation of that, and we've seen it again, like I say, with Impact and AEW and things like that.
Yes, I mean, again, I'm certainly not trying to say that I was talking about it before anyone else. But again, you can go back and look at interviews I gave 2 years ago, 3 years ago, where I said the future of the business is going to be co-promotion and collaboration, because unless, now look, obviously Tony Khan could afford it and Vince McMahon can afford it, but outside of that, there's no, you know, there's not, I'm not sure there's any one place that can really afford to have all of the top guys in one place. And even if you could, why would you? I've made this comparison before, right? How many guys are there in WWE right now who, if they were to leave WWE, would instantly be a top guy somewhere else? Like, several. There always are. Because they can afford to have, they can afford to pay Dolph Ziggler a load of money, you know, to be there year after year after year after year. Dolph Ziggler's like one of the best in the business. But, you know, not very many places can afford to pay guys who they're using, you know, in that particular spot.
Yeah.
Money, right? So, and inevitably, if you took, if you said to someone, okay, you've got unlimited money, like, you can have anyone you want, fantasy promotion, right? Okay, who's working on top?
Yeah.
Right? Who's the champion? But what happens 4 weeks from now, they're gonna claim that you're burying so and so, you're not using him properly, and then 4 weeks after that, you're gonna say you're shoving so and so down their throats.
Yeah.
And, oh, so and so must have heat because, you know, they had to work the opening match. Yeah, well, that's a problem when you've got, if you have all the top guys working in the same place. Like, yeah, again, it's like I made this analogy. I was talking to Billy the other day, and we were talking about what I was saying before about, you know, guys who don't sell or go into business themselves and just kind of gobble everyone up. And I said, it's like the equivalent of if you were playing, you know, if you guys were touring, right? The Pumpkins were touring, and you just stepped on the stage and just right from the beginning, you just started playing a guitar solo and kept going and going and going, and then like played a guitar solo for an hour and a half. And everyone goes, wow, that was unbelievable. Okay, guys, see you later. And everyone else, you know, the drummer and the bass player and everyone's saying, what the f***? Like, you know, but again, to sort of use that music analogy again, it's like, if you booked, you know, Metallica, the Rolling Stones, you know, Smashing Pumpkins, you know, all these like major bands, oh, they're all going to be on the same concert. It's going to be the greatest concert you've ever seen in your life. Okay, who's going on first?
Yeah.
Who's closing the show? Do you think any one of them wants to open? No. You know, I want to close the show. Well, you know, there you go. That's why there has to be some hierarchy, and that's why you need different promotions, and that's why it makes more sense for promotions to pull their heads out of their own ass and once a year get, you know, okay, hey, you want to go halvesies on a big show? 50-50, you know. Or you want to go three ways, you know, 33% each on the big major show. I'm thinking this guy against this guy, you know, this guy against that guy, you know, and then you start negotiating like, you know, all right, well, look, you know, yeah, it's still not easy. But typically, I think if you're doing it right, you should have like each promotion should have like one or two guys that, you know, okay, these are the guys pulling the wagon.
Mm.
So you can position them where they need to be positioned. And then you can start, you know, playing around with never before seen matchups and, you know, and all that. It's not that hard.
No, exactly. If something like that was feasible, who would you love to step in the ring, the dream opponents of yours?
Well, right now, I mean, if I could wrestle anyone for the title, you know, in a title match with the right build in a, you know, in a sort of, with, you know, with that really kind of classic sort of build that we like to do for title matches, and we had time to luxuriate it and you know, give it the full attention. Randy Orton, Edge, and Edge, by the way, who, you know, will routinely text me and say, "Man, I love this promo. I love your match. You know, so and so." And you know, when he wrestled Randy in that greatest wrestling match or whatever they called it.
Yeah.
That match felt like an NWA title match, and he paid me a very nice compliment where he sort of said, like, "Well, you know, you're the kind of guy, like, that kind of stuff is the stuff that me and Randy want to do, you know." And for me, I mean, that's huge for a guy like me to hear it from Adam. I mean, because, you know, I grew up watching him. He's he's like, you know, he was one of my guys. So it's like to get that level of compliment. And you know, I've always thought Roman was the man. Like, even when other people were trying really hard to shit on him, I always thought he was the man. And now he finally is, because he's actually been allowed to, you know, be himself, like, and embrace like his position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he's incredible. Like, dude, right now, if I was able to. You know, work with him, why would it not be him?
Yeah.
Right. Like, he and I, and think about that as a contrast. Like, what a great story that could be, you know. Obviously, you know, as far as elsewhere, you know, Okada gets brought up a lot.
Yeah.
You know, that would be that. I mean, again, in the right setting. But again, this is not outside the realms of possibility. This used to happen a lot in the 80s and 90s. Yeah. It just wasn't. You know, just you just didn't know about it at the time because it was all happening sort of localized in their media. It's just now, because obviously everything's so global, it's now suddenly, for some reason, the fact that everything got opened up so much seemed to make it more difficult to pull these things off.
Mm.
Where, like, back in the day, it would be like, "Hey, can we get Flair to wrestle, like, Tenryu?" Like, "Yeah, sure. Like, how much you paying?" You know, like, "Let's figure out the finish. All right." You know, and it and off he went, and Flair walks away with 50 G's, you know, whatever. It's like, cool, Matt. Like, Hogan wrestled the Great Muda. It's one of my favorite Hogan matches. Like, and it's, you know, yeah, well, it can be done. Like, it's just, and I think that's probably where all this WWE and New Japan stuff is coming from now, where they're sort of going, well, why can't we just figure out, like, a couple of swaps here and there, like, when it's necessary? I mean, they've got Nakamura and, you know, a bunch of guys who had great runs like AJ and stuff in New Japan. There's a lot of business to be done. Like, same way, you know, and I don't know why that would exclude AEW from working with them either.
No.
Meaning New Japan. I don't know why, you know, and so it's like, I just see all that stuff and just go, "God, this is such a waste of energy."
Mm.
Like, can't we just, if everyone, and it comes down to the audience. If the audience really want a certain match, they've got to start demanding it.
Mm.
Instead of just sort of going, "Oh man, can you imagine what that would be? Oh, you know, the take my money gif, you know," like, no, actually, like, actively demand it. Like, "Hey, we want, you know, this person against that person." Like, make it happen, you know. Yeah. Like, stop ignoring it.
I think my issue is the sort of the tribal nature of it all.
Yes.
In terms of, you know, I get told on a daily basis I'm a shill for AEW and Raw and SmackDown and NXT and, you know, wherever else. And it's like you can just appreciate all of it. And like if you open up those avenues of communication and it isn't so tribal, us against whoever it may be, whether it be WWE fans shooting on AEW or New Japan or whoever it may be, like you say, these opportunities will arise far more.
I spoke to Paul Heyman a while back, and the first words that came out of his mouth was, "Why didn't you wrestle on that Madison Square Garden show?" He's like, "Who has the NWA World's Champion, a guy who's on such a streak? Who has them at their disposal at Madison Square Garden, and then doesn't put them in a match?" I said, "Well, wasn't my ball to play with."
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, you know, when you think about that, you go, yeah, why didn't that happen?
Mm.
Like, you know, because, well, I think it didn't happen because, you know, they were worried about sort of something potentially, you know, upstaging, you know, what they wanted to. But again, if you think like a promoter, you shouldn't really care.
No.
Because ultimately it's like, A huge night with some, you know, some great moments and great matches will just leave a positive, you know, taste in everybody's mouth for whoever was responsible for that show.
Mm.
You know, it wasn't like they were all going to go away and go, okay, well, that's it. I guess we're just going to watch NWA from now on and no one else. Like, of course not. You know, it's so ludicrous when you think, but that's just the way that everyone, unfortunately, it's just the hangover of the Monday Night Wars era.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
It's still to this day people are pretending like that we all have to be at war with each other, you know, and it brings out the best in everyone. And I was like, well, not really, because like both companies ended up having to give away about 10 years worth of creative in 3 years just to stay ahead of each other. And now look where we are. Everything's been done.
Hmm.
I remember we went to India. We do Rinka King, right?
Yeah.
And the guy, Jeff Jarrett, you know, he put that team together based on having, you know, loaded up the card, loaded up the roster with guys who understand wrestling, right? Who get it from, who look at it from that long-term business entrepreneurial perspective. Not guys who are just like, oh, I just want to get the biggest pop possible and, you know, this is awesome chance, right? But he still brought a few wrestlers like that to India because he was kind of trying to book the cards, you know, layer them the same way he did a TNA card, which was like, okay, you know, start them off with something fast and hot, X Division, you know, then bring, give them a bit of this, then give them the girls, then give them whatever, then finish with the, you know, whatever. Well, the X Division guys go out first night and the people are just not, they just don't know what they're watching. They're just kind of like, okay, I guess, you know, like they're doing cartwheels and this and that and, you know, flips and ducks and dodges and catch my boot, spin me around for no reason, catch the other boot, spin me around, you know, all that. You know, and the Indian audience are just like, huh? Friggin' Matt Morgan goes out there and gives a guy a shoulder tackle, the guy takes a big bump and the place erupts.
Yeah, yeah.
So immediately, like, Gallows, me, Daivari, you know, Trevor, he was there, like, we're all looking at each other going, oh, yes. Mm. Like, it's like going back in time.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
You can get so much more out of less. And we've got something we can really build on. And you know, these people are so hot for, like, the simplest stuff that we've got such a great opportunity here to really, you know, we've got all these tools in our toolkit that we can, you know, make money here for a long time. By the time we went back to the second season, someone was diving off the top of a cage. And I'm just going, I was only like 24 or something at the time. And even I was going like, what are we doing? Why is someone diving off a cage?
Yeah.
Like, it's a virgin market, you know, like, but that's the sort of eternal, you know, it's just one of the eternal struggles in wrestling is that like, it attracts people who have that golden goose mentality.
Yeah.
Hey, this golden goose is going to lay one golden egg a week for the rest of its life. But if you cut it open, there's 5 golden eggs in there you can have right now. Wait, what? You didn't even stop to consider it? 5 eggs right now.
Yeah, yeah, it's exactly right. I asked Twitter what people wanted me to ask you, and I think I have to stick with the most obvious one, which is Hugo.
Wrestling Twitter is so great.
Hugo asks, how long until the third match against Cody? It sort of feels quite appropriate right now. We've got the US versus UK thing with Anthony Ogogo recently at Double or Nothing. And like you say, you've had such great experience with him over the NWA World Heavyweight title, of course.
Yeah, well, apparently he doesn't want to do it, so you'll have to ask him.
Okay. Well, I'll make sure I ask him when I speak to him next regarding that. In terms of advice you'd give to aspiring wrestlers, like you say, you came into the business and you sort of learned as you were there. I always like to ask, you know, people who've had such experience, that the main thing that they would give out to anyone watching this who's hoping to get into the industry.
It's not something that I've always followed my own advice on. I will qualify that when I say this, but pick your battles. You know, that, like, it's easy to get upset about, you know, all kinds of stuff, and it's easy to sort of find yourself locked into disagreements that can quickly become sort of toxic kind of feuds. And, you know, sometimes it's best to just kind of walk away from it. I would also just say, approach the business as a business from day one. Like, it will at times earn you a little bit of heat with people who don't have that same mentality, but in the long run, you will have more control of your own destiny. Because the minute that you, I see this all the time. I see someone debut with WWE or AEW, you know, and right away they're on Twitter and they're going like, oh, you know, I dreamt of this moment since I was 7 years old. And, you know, like, I'm just, you know, and right, it's like, that's great, right? But save it till you retire.
Yeah.
Because now you're saying it and you're giving away, you're showing your hand. You just told everybody, you just told them and you told everyone that, like, you're just happy to be there.
Yeah.
You just told the world that, like, wow, you know, just being here is enough. Okay, well, I guess we'll keep that in mind when we renegotiate your contract. You know, like, and I see a lot of that, and I, you know, and I've, like I say, you know, this is not all stuff that I've always adhered to, but it's like, you know, treat it like a business. Don't get too sentimental. Like, I have, if anyone had a reason to be sentimental about, you know, a company they were associated with, it's me, right? But here's the deal: I don't own any part of the NWA. I don't have any stake in the business. You know, would I like to at some point? Sure, but, you know, that's a lofty ask, right? That's a, you know, that's an ambitious goal. Not to say that it's not a good one to have, but I don't own any part of it. It doesn't, none of it belongs to me, right? It's not mine, you know. And you can, that, you know, when I came to the conclusion that I was not going to renew my contract at TNA, you know, that was a, to start with, it came out of anger. But then after a while, I had, you know, I still believed it. I still kind of went, okay, just, you know, just think about it, think on it longer. And I still just got up, but no, it's time to go. No matter what happens, it's time to go. But it doesn't mean that it wasn't very emotional when you leave, because, you know, you see all these people, like, I saw, like, Bob Ryder and, you know, Keith Mitchell and just, you know, all the crew guys and all these other people all the way down the line, as you know, and, you know, who, you know, sort of helped you go from being this sort of complete greenhorn, like, sort of prospect to being a world champion, and, you know, and sort of having a responsibility to sort of try to carry the company forward, you know. And it's emotional to think, okay, that's it, like, close the door. But at the same time, you've also just got to look at it as, like, it's a business, you know. Aldous Enterprises was in business with TNA Entertainment for a certain amount of time, and now Aldous Enterprises is in business with Lightning One until such a time that it is not. At this point, you know, my contract's up at the end of the year. So it's like all of this that I do and everything that I'm involved with and everything that I'm committed to, you know, you have to sort of maintain also a healthy awareness that you may find yourself, when you least expect it, you may find yourself having to be ready to start all over again.
Mm.
And if you keep a healthy awareness of that, I think you have a bit more power, because if you're not scared of going it alone, right? Like don't be terrified of getting released from your contract. Mm. This is a perfect example. You know, when Mickey got the call a few weeks back that she got a release, she just kind of went, okay, thanks, Johnny. And looked at me and she went, well, I just got fired, you know? And it was like, and we sat there for a couple of minutes and, you know, she was tearful, but more from, you know, just again, just because it's like it's an emotional sort of situation.
Yeah.
But then we just sat there and went, okay, what are we going to do? And it wasn't like, what are we going to do? Like, oh my God, what are we going to do? It was a, oh, cool. Now all those restrictions are lifted. All right. What can we do?
Mm.
You know, now what are we able to do now? Like, again, looking at the positives and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I launched my supplement company at the beginning of the year and it's doing well. And I'd wanted to move into a women's line of stuff. But, you know, for me to do that, I really wanted to have access to Mickey to be the face of it. And as crazy as it sounds, I was sort of reluctant to do that while she was under contract at WWE.
Yeah.
Because every week it was like, can't do this, can't do that, can't, you know. So in some, you know, so right away, and again, I'm not criticizing them for that. That's, you know, that's, you know what you're signing up for. Mm. That's another thing I would say to you guys, like, hey, don't be in a rush to sign a contract. Like, because... the contract works both ways, right? You're making a commitment to them, but they need to make a commitment to you too. You know, like guys who, you know, sign contracts where the organization is not obligated to pay them anything. I just go, well, what kind of contract is that?
Mm.
Like, you agree not to wrestle anywhere else, but you only get paid if they book you. Like, mind blowing. Anyway. But, you know, this time around, because she's got her own, you know, she's got so many other things that she's doing. And we've got our own things that we're doing, you know, on the entrepreneurial side. It's like, great. All right. Well, cool. Now, you know, and within the first two or three days, like, she booked like tens of thousands of dollars worth of appearances. So it was like, all right, well, you know, that's that part of it covered. And like now, you know, now we've got time to work on this and that, and we don't have to keep sort of tiptoeing around your contract. And, you know, we can call that person back who wanted to use you for this thing. And, you know, all that sort of, it's just like world's opening up. And so, yeah, it's just, again, like if you take the time to build and develop your own act and your own brand as an entity in the pro wrestling space, you immediately have more power and more value than someone who is just like, please sign me. You know, like every single bit of the National Treasure character and everything that I do is mine.
Mm.
Like, it's not like when if I was to ever move on from here or anywhere else, it's not like I'm suddenly like, oh, well, I'll have to change my name and I won't be able to use this, you know, I won't be able to do this stuff or that stuff. Like, it's mine, and Billy believes in that. You know, Billy believes in his, you know, because he's an artist. Like, so he shares that sort of mentality of like, because he's been there on the other side. You know, I wrote this song. Like,
yeah, yeah.
How to do it? You know what I mean? It's my song. Like, it's my song. It's my talent. It's my act. So it's like, and he paid me as big a compliment as anyone could pay me. We had a meeting recently and he was discussing his decision to basically sort of shut everything down during the pandemic and just sort of you know, go into sort of hibernation. And he said, he goes, you know, I knew that it was going to be, I knew it was going to be tough for the momentum of the company, but I knew if I had Nick, I'd be okay. And that's about as big a compliment as anyone can pay you.
No, that is so fantastic. That,
right. So, and that's sort of where, again, like, yeah, my loyalty is to the NWA. I'm very proud of what I've been able to accomplish both as a wrestler here and, you know, as a sort of, as someone helping shape the overall company, you know, on the business side. But it all just goes into your whole tapestry of your career, and it just, you know, builds value, take experience from it, and, you know, be willing and able to adjust and adapt as you need to.
As we bring this to a close, Nick, I'd just love to know the future plans of yours, whether they be with the NWA. You talk about your contract expiring at the end of the year. Is there anything still on that bucket list you'd still want to achieve?
Yeah, look, I mean, I don't. Certainly at the moment, it doesn't seem like WWE is an option. You know, it certainly does. It's not something that I sort of look at right now and go, okay, that's, you know, that's next. I don't rule anything out, but yeah, I mean, look, I want to headline some big shows. Like, that's really what I want to do. And whatever shows they are, like, I hope that there are shows, or I hope that they're shows that the NWA is a part of, to our point earlier, in some capacity. You know, I believe that can be done. And I would love to be able to be responsible for some of those changes, the same way that Cody and the Bucks were, in that respect, that you know, they helped sort of prove that with the right infrastructure and the right resources and, you know, everybody sort of working together, you can pull it off, and I'd like to be part of some more of that. And I don't think it's anyone who's been around me and knows me in the industry knows, you know, it's no secret at this point that I certainly have aspirations post wrestling to, you know, to work on the executive side. Because I get as much enjoyment out of that as I do from performing. I really do, because I love business, and I love this business, because it's such a unique sort of it's a bit of a casino. You know, there's a lot of dice rolling, and you know, I sort of liken it to being, you know, in the wrestling business, is likened to being in a casino. You sort of go play at this table for a bit, and that one's paying out, and then okay, time to walk away from the table, go find a new table, you know, go play something else. So yeah, and like I said, just those big matchups, because at the end of the day, like, I, you know, obviously want to cement a legacy and want to be remembered, and the best way to do that is to have those memorable moments, you know, that live on for a long time.
Well, best luck with all that. You do realize that saying the word casino means you're now going to be forever associated with the Casino Battle Royal whenever AEW does the next one of those. But we would love to see you there. And obviously, we'd be great seeing you in the NWA. And you can see Nick against Trevor Murdoch this Sunday live on pay-per-view on Fight when our shadows fall. Make sure you go and check that out. We'll put all the links in
the UK-friendly time. The UK-friendly
yes.
time, 4 p.m. Eastern and 9 p.m. UK time.
Yes, very much, very much.
That's one of the main reasons we have that time slot, so that the Brit fans actually have a pay-per-view they can watch at a reasonable hour.
It is very much appreciated, Nick. I could chat to you all day. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to chat to us. Best of luck on Sunday, and hopefully we'll speak again soon. Thank you very much, Nick Aldis.
Thanks, Adam.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.